You're listening to Waveform, a show about music, discovery, and the technology that ties it all together in new and powerful ways. This program is brought to you by Wavelake, the easiest way to distribute and stream music using Bitcoin. Listen today at wavelake.com.
Hello.
Huh?
Oh, are you taking...
I wasn't looking at the screen. I was looking through my notes.
Michael, we're live.
Okay.
Michael, pay attention. We're live. Hello, everybody.
Hi, welcome everyone.
Waveform, episode 10. We got a special guest today.
We do. I'm excited about this one. We have Oaken from Black Vulcanite. We talked with him about a bunch of stuff. Music, yeah. Bitcoin. And yeah, we'll have that coming up in just a few minutes. But before we get to that, do we have our mailbag music?
Give it a boost. Give it a boost. Messages.
You've got those boost.
I've heard of audience participation shows, but this is ridiculous.
So, yeah, we got some comments from a few people on the last episode where we were talking about things like Ticketbot and the concert. Yeah. Well, we talked about Toast. Yeah.
We did talk about Toast.
So it's Toast, Ticketbot, and Nashville. If you haven't RSVP'd yet, download the app. Check it out. We actually were on TFTC with Marty Bent this past week too. If you want to check that out, where we talk more in detail about what we built with Ticketbot and sort of the potential with ticketing on Noster.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So RSVP to our concert in Nashville. We're really excited about that. And thank you to everyone who has already.
Getting close to selling out. Just kidding, it's not. But we have RSVPs, and we're excited about it.
So few comments, zaps, boosts from the last episode from Tone Record. Boost for the Toast Talk. He's boosting us for the Toast Talk.
So we did get some love on the Toast Talk.
Awaiting the new series, entertaining time. And then, let's see, Sarah Jade chimed in. Can't wait for the show. And Choo Choo. I think that was referring to your train in Arizona.
Oh, yes. Yes.
Let's see. Dirty Jersey Whore commented, looking forward to catching this guy live in Nashville, boosting from the Waveform podcast. Y'all be good. I assume that's talking about Joe Martin.
Yeah, I played that killer Joe Martin track last night.
Yeah, that song was in my – I actually went back and listened to that live album after hearing that Amelia song.
Good stuff.
It's a great album. Yeah. Speaking of Joe, he wrote in, can't wait to get my hands on the Bitcoin vinyl. Going to need to buy a record player to play it on, though.
Yeah, you might need one of those.
And then he also wrote, want to go back on tour ASAP just to use Ticketbot, which is awesome to hear. We want to give artists a chance to try it out as well. So, Joe and anyone else, if you're interested, reach out because while it is an open source tool and you can, you know, go like try and deploy it yourself and run it yourself if you want, we'd love to help out as well. So, give us a ring. And also Snap from Joe. God Only Knows is my favorite tune too.
I like your style, Joe.
I was actually thinking about that for like the past week or two since you brought that up, like what would be your favorite song?
Yeah.
And I keep landing back on Like a Rolling Stone by Bob Dylan.
Basic. I'm just kidding. No, that's a good one. That's a good one. I can respect that.
As far as recordings go, I love that recording. And like it's imperfect. It's so raw and imperfect.
Yeah. It is.
As a document, I think it's I don't know. I just keep landing back on that. No, but you know, I'm a Dylan freak.
Yeah,
so
and it's part of it. I mean, yeah, it's a pivotal song for the early stages of a really cool generation in the 60s.
Yeah.
It's certainly started a lot of really, really interesting stuff. So sure. Yeah. It's a gateway to folk music and hippies and drug culture and peace and love, peace and love. I'll give you that. God only knows, well, it's still better.
It's kind of, I mean, I think of like a Rolling Stone as like an anti hippie folk scene song, but maybe I'm just reading into
no, it. No, I don't, I'm not saying that that's what that's, it's certainly not what it's about. It's not about like flower power or anything, but
yeah,
I think it, you know, it's the gateway to what came after that. It precedes,
right.
It precedes a generation. Those fans sort of turned into that era, you know,
right.
Really good gateway for protest music. And yeah, I don't know. I respect Dylan. I have a thing with Dylan.
I know. It's okay. We don't need to go into it.
You know all about it.
And then a little bit
Let's
more.
Let's talk about Dylan for 2 hours.
That'll be
before
our
we get into okay.
our spinoff podcast.
Yeah.
And then QW wrote in, lightly toasted sourdough, thin crust, well done pizza. There is no second best.
You know, I'm seeming to get a lot of people agreeing with me. On this podcast,
that's fine.
I mean, that's first of all.
I'm an icon.
What up,
I'm
QW? Second of all, I like your style. I like your style there too, buddy.
I mean, that sounds good. A lightly toasted sourdough, thin crust. Oh, I mean, that's a lot of. That's like delicious. That's a Starbucks order right there. Lightly toasted sourdough,
venti, lightly toasted. Done. No, yeah,
yeah.
The Starbucks exactly. order. Starbucks orders drive me crazy.
And then I do want to mention, because we usually don't talk about mixtape on this podcast, but that is like our other podcast that's purely music for the most part.
Yeah.
But we do get you know, some comments through there too, like people just saying I dig this song. Missy Mountain, the great Brian Wilson would love this great arrangement. Someone wrote that. Broadreach Music wrote in with that.
I love that track. I heard that track again. I was hanging out with a fellow Bitcoin dude today in the city, and when I walked in, that track was playing. He was listening.
Yeah,
to like
that's great one. Anna Treacle, right? Is the name of the artist? Yeah. Yeah, they've got some cool stuff. So yeah, that's our mailbag for this week.
Thank you, everybody. So
thanks for writing in.
We got anything else to talk about? Are we going to pop right into our killer combo with Oaken?
Yeah, let's just pop into it. I think it was really interesting. And don't forget, you can boost the songs that we play during the interview. There's a couple Black Vulcanite songs that are going to be played. So if you dig it, send him a little love. He talks about, you know, what a trip it is to have set up the splits, and, you know, his bandmates and co-producers and all that are seeing those sats trickle in. So that's cool to hear.
Yeah, it was cool to get to know him. And him and I had a whole podcast after the podcast. After after you left, when your battery died, we just kept going.
Yeah. So, I mean, he's got a lot of interesting stuff to say. So
he really does. He's a cool dude. All right, let's get into it. Here's Oaken.
So Oaken. I think we've been like connected on Twitter for a while. I don't know how long, but I remember hearing you say, it's probably close to a year or more now, where you've been like saying, oh guys, I'm going to be uploading some tracks soon. You just wait for like a year.
Yep.
And I got to the point where I'm like, listen, this guy seems cool, but, but I don't think he's got any music.
Where are these jams?
He's got nothing. And then one day, like a few months ago, you upload some Black Vulcanite tracks, and I was floored.
It was worth the wait. Well,
totally worth the wait.
Blessings.
So glad you got around to doing that. Yeah. So do you want to, I mean, you're calling us now from Namibia.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Correct. Namibia in Southern Africa.
Yes. And your group Black Vulcanite hails from Namibia.
Yep.
And yeah. So can you tell us a little bit about the group, like your role in it, you know, how long you've all been doing it, all that stuff.
Oh, great. Yeah. Firstly, thanks for having me on. You know, I truly believe you guys are busy building something that most people didn't even think about. Like, the easiest way to describe Wavelake to me is like, I'm like, remember Bandcamp? Yeah, but with Bitcoin, bro, and it goes all to you. And they're like, wait, what? And I'm like, okay, let's get into that. So really, firstly, thank you for building something where from value to value, it can really shine. As an artist that used to be a broke artist, this is exactly what we all wanted, all the time. But, so BV, aka Black Vulcanite, I got into as the last member of the three man crew. There were two rappers, right? Mark Mushiba and Ali That Dude, aka Mark Question and Ali That Dude. And they created one song. It was called on our first album. It's called Fallen Sun. Fallen Sun was the first actual recorded track that we released as an within the album. But I wasn't part of BV. There was no Black Vulcanite at that time. There were just two guys that knew each other from the neighborhood, both insanely great rappers, and they created a song. So while I was in South Africa, in Cape Town, doing my honors degree, Ali That Dude contacted me and he was like, bro, we need a poet on this one track. I think you would round it off really nicely with like all the poetry you've been doing internationally and whatnot. At that time, I'm an internationally recognized poet from like anthologies and like, you know, different things. Like, I'm just like, hey, let me show you Namibians can do poetry too. And I'm like, cool, let's check it out. And on my mother's birthday, which was last week, Friday, the 17th of January, but this was 2012, we recorded the first single off of the Remember the Future album, which was called I Hope They're Right. Right? So that's the one where I did the first ever recorded poem of me, you know, with a microphone, like my best poems are the ones I'm not ready to. And I'm like, oh, shit, I kind of sound nice. And once we finished that recording and listened to the mix down, we were at Mark's place and he was like, maybe we should make more of these, you know, and put a name. And we're like, okay, what are we going to call it? And like, it was one of those things where like, we're all kind of nerds, you know, with different things, not fully nerd, but we're all kind of, you know, you're a skateboarder, you're into like statistics on sports. I'm a poet with different things. And we're like, you know, we all like the Vulcans. Like, it makes sense, technology and all that, you know, and we're Black. So we're like Black Vulcanite. And we're like, what do Black Vulcanite mean? Like, you know, the resurgence of Black identity and all that. And we literally built it out of a, let's try some stuff. That's a short.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like, I was actually telling someone about Black Vulcanite like a week or two ago, and she's like, oh, cool, there's like a sci-fi tip there. And I'm like, how did you, because I've listened to the songs
and you don't get it,
and I hear all the sci-fi themes, but I'm like, how did you know that? Just, and then I was like, oh, right, Vulcan.
Yeah.
Star Trek.
Yeah, we'll be out here with the Vulcan salute, you know.
There you go.
But I think that it was one of those things where not everybody was a nerd, not full on nerd. You know, like I wasn't coding, Mark was coding, Ali's a nerd in his own way. We're all nerds in our own way. Everybody is, but like to understand that even while being your own nerd, you could create some fucking history.
Yeah, man. Was that the first time you were ever on a mic?
Yep. Well,
how'd that feel?
I've been on camera before, you know, like in front of a camera and there was a microphone.
Yeah, but actually like as a performer.
No, that was the first time I ever stepped into a booth. I was like, so you guys
were you freaking out?
So I speak now? Is this when I go? And they're like, yeah, go. I'm like, all right, my best poem. It was the first ever, yeah.
That's cool. That's awesome. I kind of want to hear some music. You picked out a couple songs. You still want to do those original
two that you picked out, or is there
something else? It'd be cool to hear one so people can get a little taste of this and we can come back and talk some more. Which one do you want to do first?
Do whatever order you want, man. Whatever order you want. I love all our music.
Yeah. All right, cool. Let's check out Beware of Cars.
That's great.
Beware of cars, I spit bars like guitar sets. We call next on the markets with the mean arse tits. Eating from the bottom for too long. These hood rat chicks, they have me wasting my coupons. Beware of cars, I spit bars like guitar sets. We call next on the markets with the mean arse tits. Eating from the bottom for too long. These hood rat chicks, they have me wasting my coupons. I could pawn my PlayStation 3 games in exchange for some coverage. Black music to white people, have enough of it. Enough of us are schooled by the game to know its tactics. It all came together in phases like band practice. Same axis moving with egos of paid actors. Taking shots from a bottle with a picture of a strange cactus. It's bourgeois, king of the playground, monarch, free slave. But at the same time, cornered by the city lights. Light-skinned girls and Range Rovers while you study in your room. And I'm nursing a hangover. Tell them, keep them guessing. Don't let them know what you're going through next. They waiting for that right jab, then hit them with the suplex. Girls who text while talking of bad manners. If I owe you my success, then part of my bad manners. I think gratitude should be given in different doses, but the vodka makes its way through my brain through osmosis. Ask Moses Godwin what he thought before he died. Probably wasn't concerned with trivial things like what he drives. Automobile dreams are best left for movie stars. A cautionary tale for my friends, beware of cars. Beware of cars, I spit bars like guitar sets. We call necks on the models with the Minaj tits. Heating from the bottom for too long. These hood rat chicks, they have me wasting my coupons. Beware of cars, I spit bars like guitar sets. We call necks on the models with the Minaj tits. Heating from the bottom for too long. These hood rat chicks, they have me wasting my coupons.
Yo, beware of cars, always aware of my situation. Though it may not look so looks or so deceiving, there's a reason why I'm feeling the way I do. Cause we're not eating and I'll be dreaming of beaches with white sands. It's true, and bitches with nice tans. 3,000 people screaming our names, now who the man? Crowds clapping their hands. 100 million billion Twitter fans singing every word of the jams. Yeah, we can dream, right? Damn, what would it be like if I was flossing those chains, acting a fool every day? You fucking faggots might rap, but y'all have nothing to say. Aware of cars, kid, I'll say it again. Your train of thought is lackluster, only focused on fame. The flow is effortless, plus the lyrics fire your brain. You know the name, it is one and the same. Whether you chasing cars or chasing a drain. Hey, for the happiness, you're the only one that's to blame.
Beware of cars, I spit bars like guitar sets. We call necks on the models with the Minaj tits. Heating from the bottom for too long. These hood rat chicks, they have me wasting my coupons. Beware of cars, I spit bars like guitar sets. We call necks on the models with the Minaj tits. Heating from the bottom for too long. These hood rat chicks, they have me wasting my coupons.
Gotham doesn't need another Batman. The worst thing that could happen is getting shot in the mouth in a stage where I'm busy rapping. Because wolves come in peace and it's rare that you would see them. And dudes, they get shot while they singing the Carpe Diem. Liam Neeson couldn't save him. This song is only for brave men. Damsel in distress are the women that agitate them. Women that aggravate them while loving them nonetheless. Cause you can get robbed for wearing a fancy dress. And you can get robbed for jogging in Rocky Crest. Because criminals take an interest. Be careful who you impress. But I'm dressed for the occasion. My date is half Asian. It's not Satan. This is called making a statement. What you call spitball mitzvahs. Jewish kids with that old money. Make them happy like Hare Krishna. Cause we are expectations for little sisters. That nappy hair got them in stores for that conditioner. Condition them to think that the culture is barbaric. And natural hairstyles and fashion have no merit. If you try to impress a dude in the range with beauty spars. A cautionary tale for my sisters, beware of cars.
Sit back in your current state of comfort. Never acknowledging the pain so evident in the eyes of those you so callously dub peasant with your sly gestures and sentiments. As if their own lives should be regarded less worthy in this pursuit we all go on when we stop listening to our elders' warnings. Beware of fast cars, fast girls, and big dream-chasing living. And so we find out. But that is exactly what we all do when we chase the chase that leaves most of us without anything else left to chase for. Leaving him a lost child of this world that becomes a tormented soul. Because the ones he loved always spoke to his mind but never his heart. So how could they ever really come to touch his soul? So when he asked himself if he loved her, the reply was always, where do I start?
for all he could ever truly say was, beware of cars.
It's who we are, ask them all and it's TBR. For the top gear show, my niggas get PBR. Who we are, ask them all and it's TBR. For the top gear show, my niggas get PBR. It's who we are, ask them all and it's TBR. For the top gear show, my niggas get PBR. Who we are, ask them all and it's TBR. For the top gear show, my niggas get PBR. Who we are.
That's cool, nice. Man. Who is someone in the group do the beats and the music for that? Or do you have a producer you work with on that record?
Oh, so that was one of the craziest parts of So there's a bit of a story behind Black Balkanite getting our first record deal. We couldn't give the record label the Remember the Future album because everybody that worked in the album did it for free. So like the beats were given to us for free. The artwork was done for free by like literal designers that own design studios. Like everybody was like, yo, we love the concept of what you guys are doing. We heard, I hope they're right. We want to do, what can we do? So, it was a bit weird. So it's kind of hard to answer that question because it's, there isn't really a
so many people involved. Yeah, highly collaborative record.
I'll give you an example. So like the guy that made over 80% of the beats, Maloon the Boom, flew in from Switzerland to Namibia, nowhere to stay, didn't know a single one of us. He was here for 3 months and he created the beats for everything besides maybe 2 to 3 songs in Namibia, and then we rapped on them.
Wow.
And then he went with us to Cape Town while we actually went to go sign our record deal, and he was busy making beats for us to finish the album off. It was like one of those, yeah, let's just all go together. You know, it was one of those.
That's so it's awesome. So it's like everyone was just feeling the creative juices flowing, and I guess it sounds like you didn't sort of do all the business stuff, and that
you did none of it.
Turned into a problem in the end.
We didn't pay for a single thing, like artwork, research. Like everybody was like, yo, how do I add value to this BV project that you guys are doing that we didn't know you could create? We also, as BV, we didn't know we could create. So everybody was like, I want to add value. And we're like, all right, cool. Everybody add. So when we signed a deal, they were like, yo, we got a tribute so we can get the money. And we were like, you know what? The easiest thing is you're not allowed to get that. You can't get this one. We'll give you the next one, but this one is free. So we just released it for free everywhere.
What year did that record come out?
Officially 2013. We finished recording it in 2012, but we weren't allowed to release it till after we signed the record deal.
Well, so how did that release go? Like, so you decided to release it for free. I mean, what was the record label's reaction to that, first of all?
Everybody was already on the train. Like, people were like, yo, BV's busy bringing back real hip-hop. These are, I'm not a rapper. I'm a poet, right? I write poetry. I wasn't, before BV, I never performed poetry. I never spoke it out, really. Ali, that dude, literally called me and was like, yo, bro, I need you to do an opening poem at my set in Cape Town. You were there. I can't pay anybody. Help me. And I was like, bro, I got you. I've never done a poem in front of... But like the whole thing was, BV was an organic building of experiences that got us into Rolling Stone magazine somehow. And BBC awesome. As like one of the best 100 hip-hop songs of all time. But it was all organic. It was people that added value because they felt the movement. It wasn't payments and... Yeah, people got paid, but... Not as per se for whatever.
So it sounds like the music community there is pretty strong. The art community is pretty strong. Is there a lot of crossover between other forms of art, like art forms and music, or was that pretty unique to bring in a poet to a hip hop group?
At the point in time, I mean, I think there was one other group that did it. Mark Mushiva or Mark Question was part of Run Nams. Run Nams was the first hip hop group to ever do a jazz festival in Namibia. to get invited and be on stage accepted. I mean, everybody applies, but they were, and yeah. I mean, they're, if you've ever heard of who Yuma Sakela is from South Africa, he's a legendary jazz artist. And they were on stage with you doing like, again, these are musicians, you know? Then that's a different thing. They were like 8-9 guys. When you get three guys where one's a skateboarder and a rapper slash poet, another one has an insane addiction to, you know, statistics on every sport form, whether it's American football, soccer, whatever it is, his statistic knowledge is crazy. And then you've got me, who's just, you know, a poet. I like to write words on my forte. It's just what I do. But when you put these three people together that are not necessarily all grown up together or aiming at the same thing, but they're just like, what can we achieve? Like, let's just test it out. And then you start seeing something where you're like, wait, it seems people were waiting like for something like this. So let's make another song. And song number two, and song number three, and then an album comes. And you're like, wait a minute. Did you hear that they like featured us on what? So it starts becoming a thing. And for us, it was just a thing of like, yeah, we could try and aim at like, we're going to be the next Roots, or we could be Black Vulcanite. I hope that, I know I was getting around about way, but I hope that answers it.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, that makes sense. Super creative approach, sort of putting aside all of the concerns about how to do it right by the industry, which I think has its merits. What did you learn from that first experience? You put together that album. It wasn't right for the label. And so is Black Colonialists the second album that actually went to the label? Like, how did you approach that differently after the first experience?
Great question. So what we did was, remember, the future wasn't an album. It was an EP. It was an extended play, right? So basically, if you were going to make a mixtape of 6 tracks and you extended it to 9, that would be an EP. We took a 9-track mixtape and we made it an 18-track EP. But also the reason is like there's a difference between an album and an extended play, in that an extended play, everything builds upon itself, right? Like an album can be, you can make an album of random collections of tracks, but you can't do that with an extended play. At the same time, it doesn't have to go through the same scrutiny that an album would have to, right? You don't have to release an EP off of a label. You don't have to. And the forefront of all of this was nobody got paid. The people that did the artwork, like Tanya Straw, she owns one of the biggest design firms in Namibia. And like, I mean, literally, if not the biggest, one of the biggest. She did it for free. Maluna Boom flew down here with nobody giving him money to create because of the one song we created off of one of his beats, which was I Hope They're Right. He flew down here to do a whole album. So everybody that added to that album did it for free. So we couldn't give it to the album. Like, how do I give a record label an album that nobody's been paid for the labor on? If I give it to you, then we got to go down into the nitty gritties of how we pay everybody for every, or we just don't give you that album under your name. It's released as a sophomore or EP, and then we give you as our first studio album, Black Colonialist, which is over 20 songs. We basically gave a double
very disc. Prolific record.
Yeah. That's an epic record.
How much time before releasing that the EP into Black Colonialist? What was the time frame there? Like a year? Or did you guys do that quick? Did you jump right into it?
So firstly, finding the beats that we all feel comfortable with working with is crazy. But most of the time, it's like, we'll sit here and like, I used to have couches back here and Mark and Ali would be sitting here, you know, we get a bottle of whiskey, whatever. And we just, somebody send us a big tape. We'll put it on. Nobody writes anything. Do you feel any of these beats? So we pull like 4 out and we'll be like, all right, bet. Let's check these out. Is there something, anybody got something for this beat? All right. Like, so it's always different. It's never the same beat to beat. But we try to narrow it down so we don't waste people's time as well. Because after Remember the Future, there were an insane amount of beats being sent to us. Because that's what, like, yeah, just get out of here, you know. I want to hear Ali rap on my beat. I want Mark to give one of those sermons. I want to hear Oaken, you know, do that poem type of thing. But, like, it's because people felt the value in what was being created as opposed to the monetary, maybe I'm on the top. Making history is worth more. So, like, yeah, I mean, I think that's how we actually got to it. But yeah, it wasn't a thing of, yo, you guys can become famous. We're like, yo, bro, BB's doing this. If you got a really good beat that we feel can display the message that we want to give, bet. I'm not paying you, but you will, in hindsight, you'll always be named on credits. You'll always, and you will get more jobs off of it. From other rappers and other poets being like, damn, I need another beat like that from Johnny Filter. Only Johnny Filter can make you a Johnny Filter beat. Like, it's nobody else.
So that's cool. So I got to ask you, I guess, about the music business there. Is it, like, was your experience good with the record label? Like, how is the overall business of music there?
I mean, look, we didn't sign to a Namibian record label. We signed to a South African one, Rude World Records. Okay. And they took a very big chance on us. I'm not knocking Rude World Records for anything that we did. We parted ways on more or less a personal decision on not, you know, agreeing with how the group would move forward or how the group was at the point in time, as opposed to corporate what needed the group to be. Right? Because BB, again, we created it because we wanted to, not because, you know, we were looking for money. It was like, yo, we want to create music that nobody else is creating, but we want to listen to it and we can create it. And it might help inspire other people or it might not, but we're going to create it. So it wasn't a thing of us looking to get a record deal. It was a thing of the record people saying, yo, we see value in what you're doing. And we think we can push this further and trying to get to a middle ground. And at some point, that middle ground just shifted and it didn't work anymore for anybody. That's the best way I could describe it without sounding like an asshole.
I mean, that's fair. I can't help but see, and I don't know if there's like Black Panther inspiration in Black Colonialists or if you guys were just ahead of your time. But I do see some like common themes in terms of like the storytelling and like this concept of like, there's like an outer space element to it too. Like, you know, similar to, I don't know if you know the comedian Bill Hicks, but he talks about, this idea of like, let's just stop fighting all these wars and like focus on the future and going into outer space. We can go do so much more together.
Yeah.
Yeah, where are, like, what are some of those themes and like where did they come from for that concept?
Well, again, like, to be honest with you, we might deny it, but like technically we're nerds, you know. I'm a comic book nerd. Beyond the other things in life, like I'm talking about interest wise, like I'm so happy that they finally showed in the last episode of this new X-Men series, Magneto pulling out the adamantium from Wolverine because I remember it from the comic books, but nobody else does, you know? Things like that is where it comes from. You know, Mark is a heavy skateboarder. He'll rap about one thing and then go into talking about like doing a 360 spin. Like all of these things are ingrained because we don't try to be anybody else but who we are, right? We're not fully nerded out, but it's like, why would you speak about something that you're not about? You can, nothing wrong with it. But when you're drawing out of something to try and help move people, to try and show people that black people, as Africans, of not just black descent, but as Africans of all African descent, you should be able to take up space where they told you 10 years ago you shouldn't be able to. Why? Because you now understand the power within you. That was what Black Colonialists as an album was about. It was about showing guys, hey, what if as black people you were the colonialists? Mentally, what if you were to colonialize mindsets as an African as opposed to Europeans or Americans colonializing your mindset? right? What would that look like? What is the narrative? What would that music sound like? It would sound like the album Black Colonialists. That's why we created it that way, was to say, like, a lot of that stuff, like the something of the iron first, is myself and Mark speaking about some shit that doesn't exist. But we're talking about all the sci-fi movies we've seen. Why? What would happen if that was a reality? And then you go into the next song. Like, so it was more a narrative on, like, why Africans should not stop dreaming as opposed to what is today, I would say.
Yeah. Yeah, that comes through. That totally comes through.
It definitely does. Yeah, it would make a really cool soundtrack too, so, to some super nerdy sci-fi shit.
Like, I tried to get an anime made off of it, but, like, you know, everybody had to.
I mean, if someone at Disney's listening,
I mean, would you say that the influences for that record specifically were more on, like, the thematic kind of visuals that you guys were coming up with, and the comic book and nerdy influences as opposed to musical influences?
Yeah, well, I mean, for us, it's always been an intertwining. I mean, if you look at the way the beats are constructed, is a lot of jazz, is a lot of boom bap. But again, how do you tell a story, like a really impactful story? If you, like, jazz music will tell you a story with no words. Now you add some words over it. You get me? Like, so it's not just about what is the story you're telling. How do you tell it for how it will be perceived? Becomes a whole, like, a theater play almost, right? You're like, how do we construct not the narrative, but an actual story that people draw their own narratives from because of how they relate to the story? And that's how we evolved into, from Remember the Future, because, I mean, I got it on my arm. It's great, it's, you know. But evolving into what we wanted to create with Black Colonialists took 3 years. It took 3 years of, like, not that beat. Nah, I don't like that verse of yours. It doesn't work on that. Like, it was a crafted thing because we were trying to tell a story. Not to push a narrative, but to tell a story that could relate to people that weren't even Black. Right? Like,
masterfully done, too, because, it really does come through. And you can tell that there was a lot of care in blending those words in the story, because it's just... Yeah, you can get lost kind of in the music and in the words just listening to the record from start to finish. I mean, I think that's a pretty good segue into how to rap about Africa. Yeah. You want to check that track
let's,
out?
Let's just talk about it. So this came, I this like that. That's my beat.
Because there are a lot of microphones here. So we are going to be trying to find our way into what our leaders have asked us to speak to you about today.
Everybody pause for the leopard. Nobody touch him, no paws on the leopard. Nobody trust him cause he's friends with the serpent. The way his stripes are looking, no flaws on the zebra. This is Africa, and here the currency's favor. The hippos have it made, tell me what you have to trade. You wanna build a pipeline, you have to wash some hands. Hyenas manage tenders, eat meat by the gram. Eat meat like the lamb, NGOs don't stand a chance. Corruption here is rife, here's what's happening tonight. We all meet at the waterhole to show off our clothes. You could tell where we've been just by looking at our toes. We're animals, and Africa's a country of ours, and the big game would definitely put a dent in your cars. Things should change, we got this independence of ours, cause the zookeeper simply extended the bars. We still caged, debt unpaid, more aid, home sweet home mortgage. Got two more days to the last payment, went from the bushveld to the harsh pavement. Stark raving mad, breaking bad for that Walter Green. They say we light years from Kwame's dream. There's only light women in magazines. Man, I don't even like women in magazines, but it seems Western vaccines all we need.
Black, genocide, famine, apartheid, Kaffir, safari, Buddha, slavery, Namibia, civil war, Congo, primordial, poverty, gorillas, malaria, AIDS.
Slippery
serpent, slithering tongue. One drop from his venom make your body go numb. The African black mamba, scaly politician. Hyenas never wander far, they out of mission. We call them clean up boys. If you're ever caught slipping, they would rip it to your epidermis. Take what you're not giving, keep your pride to yourself. These lions smell well, cooling at your local watering hole with your gazelle. They can tell you're not from, yeah, I promise you that. European looking zebra trying to blend in the grass. This is not your habitat, and we all can see the scent of fear in the air every time you breathe. It wouldn't happen to me, my wild dog back deep. Four claws, four paws, set of canine G's. I take you on a slum safari, no white sand beach. And every white man out here is just fresh meat. This is
black
Africa.
Genocide, famine, apartheid, kafir, safari, Buddha, slavery, Namibia, civil war, Congo, primordial, poverty, gorillas, malaria, AIDS.
Come on, sir! You must be very scared when a child gets born today and immediately shake your head.
Brought up the roots earlier, and I definitely hear some of that influence in there. Like, there are like notes from like Things Fall Apart that kind of that sort of are echoes, I think, that I hear in some of your music. What I'm just curious, like, what other like musical influences are you guys drawing from like, you know, that you're fans of, or that that you grew up listening to?
Oh, great question, because it was pretty widespread from the three. So just from the track I just played, there was an actual article written how to write about Africa. I can't remember the author's name right now off by hand, and it was basically like a satirical take on how Europeans and Americans write about Africans. So it's AIDS and poverty and what. So what we did was we were like, yo, how do you rap about Africa? Like, if that's how you should write about Africa, like in a different way, let's talk about how you rap about it. And that's where the whole, like, you know, everybody's always like Africa's animals, poor people, AIDS, apartheid, like it's always the same, like a chorus, always same narrative, right? So we use that to be like, how do you take back power from people telling the narrative of your story without including you within how that narrative is told? You overuse their words to a point that they even get irritated by the fact that you're using the word. And that's why we made firstly that check. So I just wanted to say that. But as to your point on, I got lost a little bit there. Your question was again, sorry.
About your influences. Oh, like, you brought up the roots earlier, and totally hear some of that, like notes of that. I'm just curious where else you're drawing inspiration.
So the only reason you're hearing that is because you're talking to me as one of the three. So if you were to speak to Mark, you'd probably get a more Slipknot, different, because like there's one thing about when we're together as a group and the music we try to create, as opposed to what we listen to. Like I love listening to jazz. I love hip hop, but if you look at all my it's jazz. Trumpet jazz music is most of mine, right? Ali's got a different feel of, Mark is more into like rock, you know, because of the way that the music is also created. It's totally different. So when we come together and we're like, yo, let's create a song, it's not let's create a hip-hop song. It's not let's create an, like, it's more like, how do we create an expression that speaks to all three of us that we would want to play, and that could potentially say something to somebody else? Because if the three of us, as diverse as we are, aren't going to listen to this song, don't make it. We wouldn't make it.
Yeah. I always love that. Yeah. Because it's just such a diverse group. I mean, in your references and the,
exactly.
the popular culture connections, and merging skateboarding with sci-fi and jazz with hip hop. And yeah, I mean, it's just, it's really cool. I love those elements. And I mean, you mentioned sort of people being psyched on the old school, kind of the old school hip hop vibe to that first record. And I mean, both records actually,
yeah.
The beats really, I mean, I particularly love the beats and the bass lines in both of these records, cause they just have that classic feel, you know, just really,
finish what you were saying. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
It's just cool. I mean, like I was just talking to somebody yesterday, I think on another podcast. I'm a music guy, so I'm typically drawn, pulled into the musical elements of things, and I get distracted, and oftentimes I can't focus on the lyrics. Like there'll be Beatles songs that I've listened to for my whole life, and I'll be like, oh, I never really even realized that's what they were singing about. Like sometimes if I listen too carefully, I almost get disappointed because I have this deep understanding of this song, I think, and then I realize they're just rapping about like the newspaper or something, exactly. Something stupid, you know. But yeah, I mean, when I listen to this record, it's, you don't get distracted. It's just like everything just sits so nicely within the music. All the lyrics and the story that you guys are telling really sits there. And it's cool to be able to kind of like pop in and out of the music, because it is like it's almost like a cinematic feel as you're listening to it, you know. That chorus, I mean, it's probably, I don't know if you refer to it as a chorus, but when you're naming off sort of the buzzwords
that people
drop about Africa. Yeah, the chants, like it really, it comes across, you get it. Like you immediately get it, you know, like you're putting that front and center and you realize sort of the...
I won't even lie to you. Like when we created that song, it was in another producer. He's a very well-known DJ and producer in Namibia. He's known as Kno Master. So K-N-O Master. It's a bit of a German thing as well. But like we were in his studio, you know, drinking Red Bulls. At the time, it was sponsored by Red Bull. And we had a totally different chorus. And we were listening to it and we were like, ah, bro, like, does it do the impact? So the funny thing is, so when we won our first award, our first music award, right, was for the best music video of that year, the best hip-hop music video or something like that. And we were supposed to do that song on stage, right? And we got on stage and we were like, nah, we're going to do the song we just played, right? Like this one, like How to Rap About Africa, which is from a totally different album, right? Like nobody had heard this shit. We literally made up the chant the night before we got on, like, oh, this is what we're going to perform. And they're like, this is not the song. We're like, listen, people want to see Black Vulcanite. We're Black Vulcanite. We got our band. We got live band down here. We're giving them all our money. We don't pay the band what you're going to pay us. We're going to make this song because you need to. And at the time, he was the prime minister, I think, or the president. I think it was prime minister, but he became president. And we're literally doing exactly what you heard. Like some of them are derogatory terms in that song. They're said that way because it has to have the impact of the next word after it to show you how that polarization matters in the past, but not necessarily the future of where you're trying to go. And he was sitting there. There was ministers, everybody. We were still doing the song that most people would have been like, bruh, you can't even play that song to the president. We did it live because the impact of it went year on year on year. You know, everybody's playing the same video clip. So that was also another part of it.
Sounds like you guys are a little punk rock too.
I mean, we're sure. Cyberpunks without knowing at the time we were cyberpunks.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's been... When did Black Loneliness come out? What year was that?
End of 2015, about, I think, August or July.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just curious, like, if you think, I mean, obviously things are mostly the same, but I'm just curious if you think perceptions of Africa have changed at all in the last 10 years-ish since that album came out, you know?
I love you guys' questions. You guys got great questions. Like, y'all got some real critical thinking questions. It's not just that, oh, somebody else asked this, so let me ask it too. So the true answer is, has the perception of Africa changed? I don't think so. I still think the Western world thinks that it's their place to try and save Africa, whereas Africans would like the Western world to leave us the fuck alone so we can save ourselves without, you know, like interference at every nook and cranny, as is the case right now. We can't even save ourselves because somebody's always dictating something. So I think if people were just to allow Africa to do what they allowed China to do, which was discover how they want to move forward. And I say this as somebody that got the MBA from China. That's why I'm using it as an example. It would be really great because I've seen what it did for China while I was there and it was amazing. So I really think the entire aid and Euro mechanism of I will save Africa because I know what's better. Nah, Africans have never asked for any of that. Just let us do us. That's all we've ever asked for. I think that would be way better.
Yeah, from the people that I've talked to from Africa, especially in this Bitcoin space, it seems like Bitcoin might play a really small role in, not a small role. It's playing a small role now, but ultimately could play a really big role in being a utility for you to handle this without needing the handouts from the Western world, which you don't even want, but it kind of have been forced upon you over the however many decades now. And it's exciting to see. We got kind of a friend in this space, Man Like Quex. Have you ever come across him?
Yeah, I know Man Like Quex. He's my homie. Yeah, doing that thing.
He's the man. And you know, it's like talking to him about just how, you know, the utility of Bitcoin and the value of Bitcoin is just really, you know, sort of helping him to build up his own communities. He's doing that Proof of Work Academy right now, which is really awesome. You know, like really starting from like a grassroots level.
Well,
making a significant difference with very little.
I'll say this, right? Like, so, and this is something that I think we found out while being Africans from different countries that were literally speaking about Bitcoin with each other, that it was like, so like Man Like Quex is one of my most favorite African Bitcoiners. And it's because like, he's not technical, right? I'm not technical originally, but like Man Like Quex, he came to me we went for the launch of Machankura in Kenya. And he was like, bro, like when you guys would speak on spaces, like a lot of that shit went over my head, but from what I did gather and what I went to go look into, I was like, how do I say this to people that are my audience? Like, how do I translate that knowledge? And for me, that is, I always tell people, it's not about being the smartest person in the room when it comes to Bitcoin. Can you tell the person that is not the smartest in the room the same information that you would tell the smartest person in the room? If you can convey it. So like there was this one guy that interviewed me from New York and he gave me the term. It's not about financial literacy. It's about financial fluency. Can you convey that message of what the finance can do and how it does it to somebody that doesn't understand it because you're fluent enough, right? To not have to use all the big terms. You can speak as if you're talking to somebody that was born on a farm, grew up on a farm, never left that farm, but they will understand it because of your fluency in the topic as opposed to just you reading a book. That matters more. So the conversation matters and not what you think the conversation should yield. And in that...
Yeah, it's the difference between talking to...
Correct.
Yeah, it's the difference between talking to somebody who's been, you know, as educated as you can be in Bitcoin versus talking to somebody who's getting into like a shitcoin or something. Yeah. And you hear them pitch, try to sell this thing that's just been whipped up out of thin air and then start getting technical. It's like, I don't know. I just know that it's going to be big, you know, like that's sort of where that conversation ends.
Yeah.
And with Bitcoin, it's so much different. I mean, it has obviously like a deep history now, but then the use cases around the world are just undeniable. I mean, if you start to learn these things and you see how they're interacting with people in all over the globe. It's just, you know, it almost tells the story itself. So it's just, once you discover it and once you sort of have that confidence to speak it, it's typically ends up being really powerful for people.
Yeah, but I mean, that's exactly why we're here. Sorry, you were saying?
I was just going to ask you, Oaken, I'm curious what the money situation is like in Namibia. I don't know like how the currency works or how like banking is and why ultimately you started getting interested in Bitcoin. I'd like to know kind of how you got there.
Well, I hope I don't forget how both of you, what you said and what you're asking actually linked. Yeah. It's literally the story of mostly how I became the Bitcoin I am. But I'm going to see how I answer both of them. So let's start on the monetary side of Bitcoin and like, let's start at the latest question. So you were asking about the money situation in Namibia. So the Namibian dollar is pegged to the South African rand, right? So 1-to-1 from a Namibian side, which means you can spend a South African rand the same way you would spend a Namibian dollar in Namibia. Now, in South Africa, you cannot do the same. A Namibian dollar is not 1-to-1 to the South African rand because we're pegged to them for their stability. So when it's in their country, they will give you maybe 97 cents instead of, 1-to-1. So that's the first thing. It allowed for a lot of stability when we, in 1990, before South Africa even got independent let's call it independence from apartheid regime, right? Ours was 4 years earlier in 1990. Via the UN, different things. But the main point is we even though we were independent before South Africa, we were pegged to the South African rand. So we still needed, them to do certain things for us to do certain things. And this has always been the relationship with the South African rand and Namibian dollar is, If the South African rand sneezes, the Namibian dollar catches a cold, right? Because their monetary policy, even though we have our own monetary policy, because we're still pegged to their money, we will always have to, if they get grey listed, even though we aren't, we're still going to suffer because they're grey listed. Things like that matter. Whereas, when you look at the from that angle of understanding our monetary system of your money is dependent on another money that you can use within your country, you start looking at the monetary system. But weird if you really pay attention. Add on to that, right? Like I said before, you cannot do the vice versa. One Namibian dollar does not buy you what one South African rand does in South Africa, right? Then you start looking at, okay, what does sovereignty mean as a nation? If what happens in your country's economy affects mine, I'm not financially sovereign. I might be politically sovereign, but I'm not financially sovereign because whatever happens in your economy happens in mine, maybe twofold. So that becomes a problem. So then we start looking, and that's why I'm always like, yeah, Bitcoin should make a lot more sense to Namibians than it does, but they're not looking at it through the right lens. Now, when you add upon that the political and everything else, and then we move over to how do I say this very nicely? we move from like financially not being sovereign, right, to still being a sovereign state, to still following innovations that South Africa does. Like if South Africa has achieved it in its main spread, cool, as Namibia will look at it. E-wallet was in South Africa. It's electronic wallet, right? So it's an FNB's first national bank. It's one of the biggest banks in South Africa and the biggest commercial bank in Namibia. So if they were the first ones to come out with this, I can send you from my bank account to your cell phone number, I can send you money, right? And when it came into Namibia, everybody was like, I'm not going to trust that, what. But as technology moved, all the old people, they still don't understand how the technology works, but they use it every day. They send it to their gardeners, their nieces, their aunties. Everybody gets e-wallet. Nobody understands it. And this has been my biggest gripe with Bitcoin was Africans aren't all going to go, same way as Europeans and Americans, they're not going to go study all of how it works, but the use case will help. And that's how all of, I know I've taken a roundabout way to say this, but like they all add and build upon each other, almost like a chain of first, once I get this, I get that and I get that. And I think, it's been taken for granted that South Africa moved really fast because of how their infrastructure is, and Namibia should because of the pegging. Whereas most people in South Africa don't even understand why and how, and you're trying to jump on somebody that doesn't understand all of it. I do hope I didn't make that complicated.
No, not at all.
Followed it, yeah. I mean, yeah. We talk about that a lot, about the importance of Bitcoin being useful over like everyone needing to understand exactly how it all works. Like, it needs to be secure. It needs to be useful. And ultimately, in the end, it just needs to work. It's like, in the same way, most people who use email don't know how email works. They just know that it's useful, and so everyone uses it. I think, you know.
Yeah, or even our financial equivalents like Zelle or Venmo or, you know, using Apple Pay or Google Pay with your phone at the grocery store or whatever. It's you need all these things to happen, because these are the bridges to the Bitcoin use case. Like, if
that's the crazy thing. Most Africans have never had any of those bridges, right? Like, so we've always been. Yeah. Like, and I mean, on Mars, unless you were South Africa or Nigeria, the rest of us were cut out of being able to do any of these things, any of them. Like, if you ask most Africans, how would you buy Tesla stock? They're going to look at you and be like, I don't fucking know. Maybe a broker, because that's the only way you could get there. Now, I can buy Bitcoin and talk to somebody with Tesla stock and be like, hey, bro, I got a hard asset. You want to trade? Because I want some of what you got. Like, now you have something within your grasp, an ability that was denied to you your entire existence, your parents' existence. Probably your children would have been denied this existence too. But now, just because Bitcoin exists and you can get your hand on a little bit and use it as leverage, you can do everything you didn't think you could do before. Like, that's the monetary part is great, but I'm talking about freedom. Like, why do we want money? It's not to buy more shit. It's to be free to do what we want to do, which might be buy more shit. It might be go on holiday. Yeah. But the freedom is what you're after. It's not how many zeros are in a bank account, because the bank account doesn't even matter. We've proved that with Bitcoin. So it's about the value you get in your life and how you can achieve it for the value you give out. So value for value.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's finally your choice.
That's it. That's you are allowed to do this now. Where it's always been blocked from you. It had a gatekeeper, and you are the gatekeeper now. That's crazy. For any
person. Yeah, that's pretty huge. Africa, I mean, it's almost.
But forget Asia and everywhere else. Literally no African was allowed to do what we are now allowed to do. So when you look at it at the rest of the point that as an African, I can talk to an Asian who can speak to a European, and we can make our own supply. Come on.
Yeah, and that's why it's so powerful. I mean, you have to constantly remind people in the United States of that exact thing. Everyone's just thinking so, you know, close-minded of like, this is just a thing in America it's a way for people to get on Robinhood or get on Coinbase or get on Kraken or whatever and do day trading and make some money. And it's all about gains and just making money. They're not thinking about how it's unlocking freedom for people in other countries. So, you have to remind them that the world's a big place. And, you know, just because you've had access to buy Tesla stock and all these other things and ways to secure have an IRA and a 401k and all these different things and access to things other people do not have access to. And that's, typically, I mean, I love pointing that out because it's typically it kills the momentum that they're trying to make, that this is just a useless utility for people. When you try to say, okay, well, you tell me how this is useless when it's like literally unlocking freedom around the world. I mean, look into it for 5 seconds and try to not feel dumb, you know?
I mean, look what you guys created. Like, I mean, okay, I'm biased. Not because of Wavelake, but because I was an artist that was broke, right? COVID hit. I was like, I know artists all over the world that I have recording equipment. As you can see over there, we've got microphones and stuff. I got a recording equipment that I brought in from China when I was doing my MBA. I brought it back home so I can record. And I'm like, well, what can I do? Since I was doing voiceovers. I was getting paid nice money, you know, by banks, coincidentally, you know, and like these people, they were paying me for the voiceovers for the back end of their stuff. But when nobody's moving around or allowed to move around, that's not an option anymore. So I was like, okay, let me call people, creatives I know around the world that I haven't spoken to in a couple of years. That was literally my thing. Like, let me just call guys and let's record it. Like, let's show the conversations nobody sees that I know we're going to have as creatives because we've had them before, but nobody else knows these exist because there's no camera around, there's no fans. So let's show all of them the real conversations creatives have. And I literally called it hashtag from the jump, conversations between creatives, right? And I did that for the first season. Second season, I was like, okay, cool. How do I monetize this? I need some money. You know, looked at and that's when I really started, and I realized nobody reads terms and conditions, apparently, besides Oaken. So I read all everybody's terms and conditions from iHeartRadio, Spotify. I read everybody's terms and conditions. And I can tell you now, I emailed Spotify and I was like, listen, because of section what, subsection what, I'd like you to take everything associated with my name down from your platform immediately. They didn't even flinch. They said, thank you very much for contacting us. Done. Because Spotify, most people don't know, Spotify will re-upload your content. That's what it says in the terms and conditions. They're allowed to, when you upload something to Spotify, they can re-upload it, make millions off of it and never pay you because they re-uploaded it. So now it's their content. Yep. I didn't like that clause, you see. So things like this got me into what else is going on, you know, in this podcasting space. So then when I said, how do I monetize this? The guy that was trying to get me into Bitcoin from 2012 becoming fully was like, bro, there's this thing called podcasting 2.0. Look into it. I looked so hard that at some point Adam Curry interviewed me. Who we all know is the godfather of podcasting. So that was a great, great interview on their anniversary. And I still earn from that episode. If anybody ever listens to that episode and pays, I get paid directly to my node. And creating that as an artist from Namibia that didn't even know how to use command line in 2019, you know, became a thing of me saying, well, if I can do it, why the fuck can't you? I'm smart, but I'm not a genius, right? If I can do it, so let me keep showing people what I can do publicly as Namibians and like show artists. So when Wavelay came around, I was like, come on now. Firstly, you're complaining about being a broke artist. Okay, if you have real value, if your art is so great as you believe, give it to the world and let's see who will give you value for your value. Because I've been paid for music I didn't think that was that great. But other people found value in it on Wavelake and they paid me. So my thing is like, okay, let's firstly do two things. One, forget your label. Have your label deal. Release it on Wavelake and let's see real numbers. Because if your label is buying streams, they can lie to you about things. But if nobody else is even willing to give you one Satoshi, bro, they don't like your music. Like, let's be honest. Like, they don't like it. So now your ability to gauge real interest in your music globally, right? Not just in your town or your village or your country, globally, because there's a global audience that's listening here, you are now able to say, oh, maybe that isn't the way I should rap. Maybe that isn't. There's a lot more information that comes than I like. I like it. What the fuck is a like going to do for what is really good? I like it, but I'm not willing to give you one Satoshi. I don't like it. It's not even a cent. You know what I mean? And that's what you guys have now brought to the forefront by with Wavelake is to say, hey, guys, you now have an opportunity to have a global audience at the touch of a button that you don't have to go through lawyers. You don't have to go through a record label. You don't have to go through distributors, right? If you have your own node or your own Lightning address, we even cut out fees But we will help you. We'll help you get to the point where you can self-host your music and get paid value for the value. Same way as if you were to take a hat, put it down on the street corner, play your guitar, and somebody throws money down because they feel value for what you're doing. We're now doing that digitally, and everybody internationally can do that. You guys have opened that, and I freaking love it. I just don't know how I'm going to get it to everybody in time.
Slowly. Yeah. We're making progress, and it's cool to, it's the music discovery is the thing that I love the most about this. It's like just discovering this record. This record's been out since, you know, almost 10 years now. Yeah. And, you know, I haven't heard it. I haven't heard it until now, you know, and I love it. And now I'm a fan, and that's, I could say that many, many times over just from music that I've discovered. And we're creating a whole, I was talking to someone this morning. It's like, you know, for the first couple of years, I was trying to get people, somebody to build this thing. I think everyone was thinking like, how do we get the old music world into this? It's impossible. And no one really thought, I mean, you know, a couple of us, Michael and I, and a few other people, it's like, no, we just start over. We just build this from the ground up. We're just building a new, it's not about trying to squeeze this old library in, it's trying to squeeze the new library in. And why can't we create, why can't we like help to put focus on music that's otherwise been forgotten about and create a whole new standard and a whole new set of stars in this new library? You know, that's what's happening. Like we're developing, we're seeing new careers be started from Wavelake, the very, very early inception of this, but you are seeing things start to develop in a really cool organic way. And that's what's so exciting about this, you know, and then people get excited about it, like you, and usher in new artists and show how it's been working for you. That's important because people trust you, you know, and then when they get there, the cool thing about it too, is if they don't like Wavelake, they can self-host it. They can do whatever they want. And that's the beauty of this thing, is you can exist on this with this idea, however you need to, whatever works best for you. And yeah, you don't have to worry if you don't want to, if you wanted to participate, but you don't like someone's terms and conditions, you can still participate from anywhere.
Exactly. I mean, I think not enough people, and for me, it was also a whole thing at the beginning. I mean, my tweets are always up. I don't really delete tweets. So you can always look back on what I said. And like, I've always like been like, yo, I love this Wavelake thing, but like X, Y, Z. But you guys innovated. You didn't just say, forget Oaken, you know, he's just complaining. Like you guys were like, okay, we got a little bit of feedback. Sorry, I'm just plugging in my laptop. Because somehow I forgot to charge it. And it's like, okay, yeah, we could just say forget Oaken, you know? Who cares about Namibia? We're doing Canada and US, you know, and we're cool with that. Or it's like, wait, we're building this because we want artists to actually have control. We want artists to, even though, because again, like a lot of people don't know how Lightning works. They don't understand that Lightning channels have to be hosted. There has to be Bitcoin literally locked up so that I can make you get this very easily. You know what I mean? So there is a cost that comes to it. I understand that, but I know also most people won't because they didn't run a node in 2020, 2021. Like I had to self-host to get paid. Like I'm literally the first African podcaster to be paid value to value on podcasting 2.0. There was nobody else before me in the entire continent. But I had to learn how to host a node without knowing how to use command line. It was a journey. But I wanted to, because once I learned how to do it, the thing was, now I can show you how to do it. You how to do it. Because the same way you don't know, I didn't know. So it doesn't take more than what I learned. Yeah. Right? I didn't need to learn a new degree. I didn't have to go. So the whole value in what was compared to what you guys are now doing is saying, hey, guys, look, we'll help you start it. We'll even host the channels for you. But you can go your own way once you are comfortable to. That in itself is what we call choice. Which is what exactly Africans never had. There was no choice. It was like, put it on Apple Music or fuck you. You know what I mean? Like, nobody in America is going to hear your music if you don't put it on Apple Music or you don't put on, like, there's no other way. And you have to go along with what these guys dictate as why you can't. It doesn't mean it's the same way for Americans to get on Apple Music, mind you, or Europeans. Like, they have different rules for every jurisdiction. that doesn't exist on a Bitcoin Noster, this type of standard. Like, just put your music up and let's see who likes it and get paid, bro. Like, it does things that most.
Yeah, and if you're an artist in one country and you find success in a different country, good luck navigating that system. It's impossible.
Exactly.
I mean, yeah, Oaken, you're like a futurist, I would say. You know, you like to think about, you know, what things are going to look like in the future. You like to imagine just based on our conversation and the music, you like to, you're pretty good at imagining like pretty far off. I'm just curious, like with everything that we're discussing about, you know, value for value, the way Bitcoin and Noster are sort of evolving and helping to change the way music is distributed and the way people are like finding music and paying for music and artists are being supported. Like, where do you see all of this? Like, how do you envision music, like listening, discovery, artists earning? Like, where do you see all that going 5-10 years from now?
Truly? I mean, a lot of people will say I'm lying or what. Like, I believe in value for value. It's always existed throughout eons of different political war, whatever structures of power you want to look at, art forms and people giving value for how they perceive value, AKA value for value, has always existed. I don't see it disappearing. And the fact that Bitcoin makes this so easy that I could have never known your name. I just saw a QR code and somebody shared a video and you from a place, I don't even know where it is. I don't know where Namibia is. I don't know. But I like that music of this Black Vulcanite group, that one track. I'm sending them money on Wavelake because I want them to make more. I know they haven't released anything in 3 years. Maybe they didn't. I'm going to make a note. Please release more music. I'll give you more money. All of a sudden, BV's like, yo, you know what? I don't even know where this person's from, but they gave each of us 300 Namibian dollars on the split, which we, by uploading the song, we didn't even need a record label, lawyer. When we uploaded, we said, okay, how many members of the group are we? Are we three? Who was the producer? I bet. Who else helped? Just get everybody. And that was what took me so long to get the music on. I had to get every artist and everybody
to get that account.
Get on Wavelength. So I could be like, please, guys, I don't know if we can change. We got to edit the splits later. I want everybody to get their money. Right? I was on stage on the 13th of April doing a how to accept and how to earn Bitcoin session. And one of the guys that came up, he got the first license from the Bank of Namibia to be an on-off ramp in Namibia. And he's talking because he was the producer that got me. He was trying to arrange for me from 2012. Only 2019 I got. Like, he's been trying, right? But he was the producer on the first, or one of the producers on the first two BV albums. So I told him on stage, I was like, yo, bro, check out your Wavelake account. He's like, why? I'm like, I added you as one of the producers. So you get like 10% every time they play this one song because you actually recorded the song. And he was like, everybody that was there got to realize in real time, he didn't even know he was getting paid from that. I put him in on it. And he's like, I was wondering where this was coming from. That's what you guys have created. There is no, I gotta go sign off with all these regulators. I know who was, while we're in studio uploading the song, we can right now say, you get 10%, you get 10. Hey, the water guy, you get 5%, bro. Every time we get paid for this, you get 5. We can do this now. That's freedom, guys.
Yes.
That's economic emancipation that comes back to your value really being valued. That's what you guys have created. That's what I love about Wavelength. Sorry, I rambled a bit.
I love the excitement, man. And on that note, I'm curious, when are we going to get some more music? When is the new BV record coming out?
I'm eager to hear a new release, Oaken.
I mean, it's new to me, and I'm digging it. But like, I'm hoping that this, you know, this sparks some new tunes here soon.
I'm not gonna lie. So we were supposed to. So our 10-year anniversary was last year. We were supposed to give an entire album to you guys. the thing was, none of us were in the same place. So Mark went and did his PhD. He's now Dr. Mark Mushiva. We all knew he was at one point going to get there. So he's based in Berlin, and he's busy shooting movies and documentaries and helping people learn how to design games. Ali's now gone into finishing off his, I think it's his master's or his honors in media. After I finished my master's, I just decided I don't want to do a PhD there because other things that I want to study, like I don't want to. Like, so that's when I started doing my Bitcoin degrees and like going into like more technical things like API certificates and all that. So I say all this to say, like, Black Vulcanite is a combination of experiences. We create music along what we've experienced in between times. So it normally takes about 3 to 4 years for us to create a body of work because we gotta go live life, come back of what we've lived, and also in our interactions with each other, be like, yo, let's talk about this on a track, because I think it will do more than us just having this conversation, you know? So it's all of our music's always been organic. It isn't let's go off for 2 weeks and create this track. Nah, we've never created that way. It's always been an organic. If we don't feel the beat, it won't get created. If we don't feel the concept that we want to be the concept, because we also want to know what you're going to say, Mark. I want to know what Ali's going to say. Ali wants to know what, you know, if it's not that, we're not going to do it. It has to be authentic or why? I mean, we're not getting paid to do it until we create the album. So why lie? You know what I mean? So I think that's always going to be ours. I might leak one.
That would be great.
This is an exclusive announcement on this podcast.
I do have a lot of Ali That Dude's music, which I'm trying to get him to leak instead of me. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I'm not even an Arsenal fan, but this guy's got a track called Thierry Henry that is insane. Like, it's just, man, like, he's just so good at it. But again, I'm trying to get more Namibians, and not only Namibians, South Africans. I'm trying to go to South Africa in September to speak with some musicians that I spoke with in January to, like, help show them, guys, look, you can release it everywhere, but why not give yourself the possibility to earn the hardest asset that Coinbase is running out of? Like, why wouldn't you want to earn this? And
it's certainly worth a shot. Yeah, that's what we always say. It's like, I know it's another thing, but hey, why not?
I mean, if people want to send you some sats for the music that's already out there, I mean, that's a way to earn some money while you're working on the next record. We're all eager to hear the next one. So, but in the meantime, we can motivate you that way. Yeah, we've been going a little long here, but I just want to say thank you so much for
I took a lot.
No. It's a group effort. Thank you so much for chatting with us, Oaken. I'm so happy you uploaded these Black Vulcanite tunes. I'll be listening to them, and yeah, it's great.
Yeah, chatting with you. You got anything you're working on that you want people to see?
I just like to say thank you guys for having me on. You know, it's always great to know that even years after you create something, you've created a body of work that people can still find value and relation to, especially when that was what you were trying to do. I think it's really great. And I mean, I've got messages from the other group members that are like, bro, we never earned for that song. And all of a sudden it's making money. And like, you get to like really be excited for something that you didn't know was going to do that. So again, thank you guys very much for doing that. Just making that a possibility for creatives from everywhere in the world. Because you guys don't, you know, geo-lock it. You're from a country, we're not going to allow you to upload music. Whatever happens after the point, that's a different thing. But it really does, especially for most Africans that can't get a Sony or, you know, you have to jump through hoops or gatekeepers. Thank you. Thank you for that. As far as what SBV we have in store, I am I am speaking with Ali and Mark. There are some tracks. The album was never completed. So there will most likely be some singles coming from all of the individual members. Excuse me. All of the individual cool. members. And hopefully something within... there are tracks we recorded together. Just weren't ever mixed and mastered. So I have to go through all of that. And then we can, you know, drop some of the little things from the last 3 years, from 2019 off. But yeah, I'd say, guys, if you're listening to this, thank you for being here for this long. Secondly, do not be afraid to upload your music and really see what people think about it. If nobody pays you but still plays the music, it's still great because it's what's happening on your SoundCloud. But if somebody wants to give you one Satoshi, two Satoshis, try to pay it forward. Try to show other artists how they might be able to see also and maybe monetize their art forms via platforms like Wavelake that actually do try to build out a future that we want to live in.
Awesome. Well, thanks, man. We really appreciated having you on here. And yeah, everybody go check out the catalog of Black Vulcanite on Wavelake. It's those two records are incredible. Listen to them from start to finish. Put on some headphones and get into it, man.
Live long and prosper.
Live long and freaking prosper, gentlemen. Yo, thanks for having me, man. This was great. I even forgot we were having an interview.
Oh, thank you, man.
You've been listening to Waveform, brought to you by Wavelake. Wavelake is a platform for artists to share their music beyond paywalls and where fans can pay whatever they want using Bitcoin. Artists retain all the rights to their work and receive payments instantly via the Lightning Network. Find out more at wavelake.com. Waveform is produced by Sam Means and Michael Ree. Theme by Paul Birkin. I'm D++. Thanks for listening.